The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Glance at any NYPD roster and you'll be reminded of the long tradition of Irish-American officers in the ranks. And my next guest carries that heritage proudly, and well he might, from patrolman to top brass. Terry Monaghan is the NYPD's chief of department. It's their highest ranking uniformed officer. He joins us from New York. Terry, good morning. Nice to talk to you today.
Good morning, Ryan. Pleasure to talk to you.
I couldn't mention Terry Monaghan, and I won't, without asking about Ireland and its importance in your life, or otherwise, by the way. You don't have to say you love Ireland if you don't.
I love Ireland. I was there just this earlier this last summer. What a great place. I'm looking forward to getting back there.
And do you have a connection to the country going back a bit?
Absolutely. You know, as an Irishman, an Irish cop, which is a tradition, started with my grandfather back in 1927, he became a New York City police officer in the tradition of an Irish cop, and same as my father back in the 40s. And I trace my roots back to, on my mother's side, to Galloway, and my father to Cavan.
Galway, Cavan, so you're Galway, all up the west coast there. Well, listen, this is already a good news story, so that's your credentials are well and truly intact. It's funny, isn't it, when you talk about the Irish-American cop, you know, right down to cartoons, whether it was Top Cat or if it's movies, whether it's The Godfather, the cop is always as an Irish brogue. Why is that?
Listen, it became the profession for the Irishmen when they came to New York City back in the early 1900s. And, you know, it's something that I've always wanted to be, I guess, just growing up. You know, you saw the Irish cop, and, you know, in my neighborhood, I had a bunch of my friends, and we all decided to become cops together. And for me, it's just been a tradition to keep up that tradition of the good old Irish cop. Right. And you look at the agency. We have Commissioner Shea. We had Commissioner O'Neill, Bratton. So the Irish still help run this New York City Police Department.
That's for sure. I was over there recently. I was talking to the Consul General, and he was telling me that at one point, in somewhere like Five Points and certain parts in New York, you'd have 30% of the population were Irish-born. So the presence is enormous.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's still a large Irish presence in New York. Listen, we're a very diverse city. We have people from all over the world in the city, and same as our police department, but the Irish still have a pretty strong stronghold here in New York City.
You joined in 1982, is that right? The 41st Precinct?
That's correct.
Okay. When you get in there as a young man, ambitious, lofty hopes and aims and ideals, what greets you when you walk through the door? Can you recall it?
Oh, it was a tough city back then. 1982, New York City was nothing like it is today. There was a lot of violence. You know, I started in the 41 precinct, and the place was burnt down. The station house that I worked on Simpson Street, it was the only building still standing on that block. Everything else had burnt down from the fires of the 70s that devastated New York City. And the 41 was, you know, it was evident of it. You know, you went to the Hunts Point section of the 41 precinct, there was, on every corner you turned, there was prostitution. Prostitutes out on the street, the quality of life there was tough. It was a difficult time as a New York City cop. But we've made a lot of changes over my 38 years, and the city is a completely different place right now.
It is amazing. It's a city I love. I visited quite a lot, and I always feel safe there for some reason. I don't know if that's in the last 20 years, but you describe almost a dystopian Black Mirror version of New York City. I mean, being a cop in the middle of all of that, was it dangerous, or was it exciting in its challenge?
Listen, as a young cop, it was exciting. But it was a dangerous job. And being a cop, no matter where you're a police officer, whether you're here in New York, whether you're in Ireland, it's a dangerous profession. And it takes a certain individual to become a New York City police officer or a police officer anywhere in the world. You know, you dedicate your life to taking care of others. You put your own life at risk for others. So it's just part of what the profession is. It's part of what we do in law enforcement around the world.
You would have been part then of the generation of cops who cleaned up the city, to use the expression. And we, I mean, from a distance across the water, we'd look and would have thought of Rudy Giuliani when he was, I suppose, a different character, if you like, to the one he is now in some ways, regardless of your politics. He just has evolved in that way. And as mayor of New York City, the zero tolerance mayor, was that a game changer, or do you think it would have happened anyway?
No, that was a game changer. Back in 1994, when Mayor Giuliani took over, and more importantly, Commissioner Bratton took over and actually gave meaning to what we did in police work, that realized that focused police work would make a difference in neighborhoods, that having cops go out there with a reason, not just going out haphazardly, focused on individuals of crime, holding commanders responsible for crime in their area, saying that we can make a difference, that police matter, it really did change the entire scope. You know, for years, prior to Commissioner Bratton coming in, we were not allowed to make street narcotics arrests. It was considered a potential for corruption. So street narcotics was rampant in New York City. But in 1994, that all changed. And we started doing what needed to be done to take this city back, to get the city under control, to get us down from 2,240 homicides down to where we are now of around 300 a year. That was the difference of the renaissance of New York City.
Sure, sure. And what a renaissance it was. And then you suddenly see it. New York has this profound influence on the United States of America, despite its size relative to the rest of the country. And I think about that because the former mayor, Mike Bloomberg, is potentially in the shakedown for the Democratic nomination for the presidency. And yet, what came to bite him back from the depths of time in the last few days was his comments about African-Americans being stopped and searched as a policy. And he was talking about the numbers of African-Americans, just do the math sort of thing. Do you think that sometimes you can get it wrong?
Yeah, you can. And as an agency, you know, we had progressed from where we were in the 90s and what we did, and we kept going in the same direction. You know, again, I'll go back to something Commissioner Bratton had always said. It's almost like a cancer patient. Mm-hmm. You had to apply chemotherapy to the patient, but if you applied too much to that patient, you would injure the patient. So that's what we did as we went into the 2000s. You know, stop and question became a measure of productivity as opposed to the actual tool that it is. And we use it way, way too much. And as we showed, moving on from there, over the last 6 years, we were able to reduce that activity and still continue to reduce crime. Because it's a constitutionally protected right for police officers, but it never should be used as a productivity tool.
One of the defining images of our times was the men and women in uniform on that awful morning of 9/11. Where were you that day?
I was actually at home when the plane said I was taking my kids to school. And I heard it on the news, and I had to quickly come in, get changed. I was eerie feeling. I was crossing the George Washington Bridge, and I was the only car on the bridge at that point. And you could see the smoke and everything coming from downtown. That day, I spent up in the Washington Heights section. That's where I was the commanding officer, trying to get people out of the city through the George Washington Bridge. And it was the next day I spent down there at Ground Zero. Just the devastation, it was unreal. You know, as a city, to see how we've bounced back from that, it's just tremendous.
There was about 23 police officers from your NYPD killed on that day. And then another 240-plus members of the force with 9/11-related illnesses. That's not something that gets talked about a lot here, at least. The impact was probably devastating, I presume, on the force for some time.
Absolutely, and it still is. You know, that 240 is each and every year. We're losing more and more, and there are more currently sick with 9/11-related cancers. It's something that's not going away. That number grows each and every year. We lose more and more officers. We're putting 30-some-odd officers up on our memorial wall each and every year right now. And it's just about almost entirely 9/11-related illnesses.
That's quite shocking. I think I saw John Stewart, the TV presenter, seems to be involved in that campaign on that subject. And it's an ongoing story, clearly. Are people being looked after enough, or is it just an awful casualty of that attack?
It's a casualty of that attack. Listen, what happened, the toxins that were in that air that day, for anyone that was down there, and our men and women were down there each and every day, us along with the fire department, a lot of construction workers, you know, it takes time. It takes time for that cancer to develop in your system, and that's what's happened to these individuals that were down there 19 years ago, and they're getting sick. Some of it's happening now, and like I said, each and every year, we're losing people. The fire department's losing people. You know, John Stewart did a tremendous, tremendous job working with us to get a bill passed to make sure that anyone who does get sick from 9/11-related diseases, that they're covered. That the compensation fund, the World Trade Center compensation fund, will take care of them and take care of their families.
Did you ever dream, Terry, when you were a young cop going through those doors in that awful city of New York as it was then, and when I said by awful, you know, the way you described it, did you ever think you'd end up wearing those badges you're wearing today as the chief?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Listen, I was a young, aggressive cop, having a lot of fun out on the streets. You know, eventually I took a promotion exam. I moved up to the agency. Did I ever think I would be the chief of department? Nah. Things just happen. They happen for a reason. I guess just being a good, solid Irishman helped move me up through the agency.
Yeah.
And I'm honored to be in this position, honored to work with the 36,000 uniformed members that we have in this agency. They're some of the best in the world, along with 19,000 civilians that we have working for us.
Let me ask you, best bit, worst bit. What is the worst, most difficult part of your job, for starters?
The worst part is when we lose an officer.
Sure.
When we have an officer shot in the line of duty, to sit down, to deal with the families, to you know, get to know those families, because they are part of our families forever, the families of our fallen. You know, the Lisa Tizzulos, Leanne Simonson, you know, their husbands gave their lives for what we do. And to sit there in the hospital and have to break the news to them, that is without a doubt the toughest thing that you'll ever do. And it's something that, you know, it will stay with you forever.
And then at the completely other end of the spectrum then, when you get up in the morning, Terry, what gives you the most joy in that uniform as chief?
Going out there and seeing how the vast majority of people just really do respect the police. No matter what you read in the media, no matter what you see, I walk to events and people thank you. They thank you for what you do. They thank me for the work that my men and women do each and every day. You know, no matter how negative you may read things, the appreciation is there. I'll give you a quick story going back. Sure. In 2014, there were tons of demonstrations in the city, you know, anti-police demonstrations. And on one New Year's Eve, I had to walk around with these demonstrators, maybe 100 or so, basically cursing me out for 2 or 3 hours. Finished with that, and I walked up to Times Square. And there were a million people there. And every step I took, someone there thanked me, appreciated what we did as an agency. So it's that understanding that though there may be negative out there, the vast, vast, vast majority of people respect and like the police department.
You're due here in Ireland for the International Fraud Prevention Conference in Dublin with a Q&A in Croke Park on March the 11th, which is close enough to St. Patrick's Day. I'm sure it's a parade and an event you're not unfamiliar with. So do you like coming back to Ireland, or is that a little obvious as questions go?
Oh, I love coming back to Ireland. I had such a fun time there during the summer. I am really looking forward to coming to this conference, sitting down with some leaders around the world, discussing the issues, but then also spending a few times, and I might have a pint of Guinness somewhere along the line.
It's been good to talk to you. I hope our paths cross at some point, either there or here, but we'll talk again, I've no doubt.
All right, thank you, Ryan.
Thanks for your time today. That's Chief Terry Monaghan, NYPD Chief of Department. Lovely taste of Irish Americana there this morning. The text number 51551.